From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. So starting from where we stopped last week, that is at the Bala Kanta, let's continue with the discussion on the Atma Ramayana, the real essence of Ramayana, the Ramayana that is still in action in a subtle form in each and every one of our lives. In the studios with me is Brother Sai Giridhar, Research Scholar, Department of Chemistry, Sri Sakti Sai Institute of Higher Learning, Prashanthi Nilayam Campus. And as we have a lot to talk today, without taking much time, over to Brother Giridhar.
So Chandu, we were discussing about the Balakanda of Ramayana and the Atma Ramayana that it conveys. That is, how is it relevant to the life of a sadhaka or our own inner principles? And in this regard, we had reached the point where the beautiful marriage of Rama and Sita happens. In fact, here Rama is seen as Jivatma and Sita is the Brahmajnana. And there is a facilitator for this marriage. As
also
Swami
the
describes.
Sattva Guna.
Yes,
right?
She also represents the Sattva Guna. And once the sadhaka or the Jivatma embraces Sattva Guna, transforms Rajas also into Sattva and completely eliminates tamasic vrittis or thoughts in his daily practice, he becomes eligible through his Satkarmas when his divine account balance is strong enough and good enough. The Sadguru's grace spontaneously flows towards him, and that grace manifests itself as a realization that he is not the body and mind, which is called the Videha Mukti. In fact, here it's very symbolic because Sita, Mother Sita, is also called Vaidehi because she is the daughter of Videha. King Janaka himself is a stellar example of this kind of a realization. He earns this from his Satguru, that is from Ashtavakra. And he realizes that he is not the body and mind eventually. And hence he is called Videha because he is not associated with any idea of being the body or mind. And since he does not have a body in that sense, he is called Videha. And here Janaki or Mother Sita is actually Vaidehi, right? So this Brahmajnana is what she represents here. And here Sri Rama, that is Jivatma, is getting married to Brahmajnana, which is the daughter of Videha. You know, it's very symbolic there. And the marriage, the way it happens, is superb. The way Swami describes it is unparalleled. It's not found in any literature per se, but it's beautiful. Swami says that actually it was time for the bride and the groom to garland each other, and Mother Sita was holding the garland in her hand and waiting for Sri Rama, and Sri Rama was looking straight ahead, you know, because he has a vow that he wouldn't look at a stranger, especially a woman. So he says, until I get married to her, she is a stranger to me.
Yes.
And hence I will not look at her. So he's looking straight somewhere else, and Janaka is trying to point out that this is my daughter.
And Sri Rama is very tall, right?
And Sri Rama is Ajanubahum.
Yeah.
He's got broad shoulders. He's known for his personality and height and all that. And Mother Sita is really, you know, trying to climb to his height and, you know, garland him, and it was not possible. Sri Rama recognizes the predicament and he gives a slight glance to Lakshmana and indicates to him, this all happens in a glance. You know, that was the kind of intimate relationship between Rama and Lakshmana. Lakshmana here represents the intellect.
Yes.
Rama is here the Jivatma. There has to be a deep relationship between the intellect, that is Buddhi, and the Atman. Jivatma being just the reflection of the Atman here. And what happens here is, Sri Rama indicates to Lakshmana, why don't you lift this portion of earth where Sita is standing? So Lakshmana again indicates back to Rama that that is not possible. Because if he does that, everybody will increase in height and it will not serve the purpose. And it is against the law of nature to do that. So he says, I might not be in a position, brother, to do this. You know, then Rama again gives him an indication, think of something quickly, right? And then Lakshmana because he's sukshma buddhi, he's a very sharp intellect, he immediately devises a plan and he rushes and falls at Sri Rama's feet. So the moment Sri Rama bends down to pick Lakshmana up, Sita uses that opportunity and garlands Sri Rama.
Yes.
Right? And Swami says from that point on, they became Sita Rama.
Yes.
You know, the Jada and Chaitanya have become one from that point of time. Here she represents the Brahmajnana. And she is the Chaitanya, consciousness, and the Sat principle, which is Jada, this which neither moves, neither talks, as we discussed last time, as mentioned in the Adhyatma Ramayana. The real principle of Rama is kind of Jada in the sense that it has no expression, it has no association with the manifest creation at all. It is absolute still, and some people even call absolute nothingness. Right? So that kind of Sat is what he is. But here you see the confluence of Sat and Chit, which is the awareness, which is Sita, awareness of the self, which is nothing but Brahmajnana. And this confluence leads to a blissful state, which is what we call as Satchitananda.
Yes.
But this whole process of Sat and Chit coming together is facilitated by the Buddhi. That is the intellect, which is represented here by Lakshmana.
Okay.
And this is how they get married and they go back there. And we know the story after that. Mother Kaikeyi asks for the two bones under those circumstances. And eventually, Sri Rama, along with Sita and Lakshmana, proceeds towards the forest. Now, we go to that point in time where they have set up their hermitage, and Mother Sita witnesses a golden deer, which was none other than Maricha the demon, who was sent by Ravana. Already the Shurpanaka episode was over, and she had made her complaint, she registered her complaint with her brother Ravana, and he had sent Maricha to delude the three of them, so that he can kidnap Mother Sita. So Maricha had come there in the form of the golden deer, and Swami describes here beautifully how Mother Sita, who left the comforts of Ayodhya, because the exile was actually only for Rama.
Yes.
It was not imposed on Lakshmana or Sita. So she, by her own choice, by her own will, she followed Rama. She left the comforts of Ayodhya. And Swami here describes a very beautiful point in the journey of the sadhaka in each of our life. He says, when Sita is also the Moola Prakriti, as we discussed, it is the Manas aspect. Manas is a bundle of desires. And when we leave desire for the world and desire only for God, then we get God. That's what was portrayed by Mother Sita. What she did was she relinquished all the comforts of Ayodhya and she got Rama. But at this point, she got attracted, or the desire for a golden deer, you know, which represents the materialistic world, came into being. The moment the desire came, she lost Rama.
Yes.
So Swami says, where there is Kama, there will not be Rama. And where there is Rama, there cannot be Kama. You know, so that when the desire crops up, she loses Rama's company there. But then here, Sita is also representing the Brahmajnana. So what happens here is, they are in a state of Satchitananda, the Jeevi is in a state of Satchitananda, but when the Brahmajnana is lost, that is, she is kidnapped away, he again comes into delusion thinking that he is an individual self associated with the body, and he starts roaming in the forest of delusion.
Yes.
So we see in the story also, then Rama and Lakshmana are crying, and you know, they are asking every leaf, every tree, every plant, every butterfly around, you know, where is Sita, where is Sita. This portrays the agony or the despair of a Jivatma in search of the Brahmajnana. You know, this is in fact the most toughest test that that a sadhaka will be put through. This is after he is given a glimpse,
yes,
of who he really is. To establish that in permanency, the Sadguru will put the Jivatma to a grand test. And in this test, there will be situations which will make you feel as though that Brahmajnana is lost, or though it can never vanish anywhere. Atma Rama is eternal, basis permanent, just like a movie screen. You have a white screen and the movie is projected for 3 hours on it, and after it's over, you shut off the projector. So the screen was there before the movie was played. During the movie also the screen was there. Even after the movie is shut off, the screen continues to remain. That screen is Atma Rama.
And that's what we discussed in the beginning of last week's episode, when Mother Sita said that Rama is just a witness, it's all my play.
Yes, exactly. And he is permanent, eternal, imperishable, indivisible, unbroken. So he was there, he is there, he will be there.
True, whatever happens
in the game of creation in between, right? So that is the Brahmajnana actually, to be aware of that in a constant integrated way, right?
Yes.
So that for that to be established, when that constant integrated awareness of this truth is there, it is called Jivan Mukti, when it happens in our lifetime. But as per Swami's description, the Jivan Mukti has to wait for some more time, and he describes how the Pattabhishekam is actually the Jivan Mukti. And here still the test of the sadhaka is going on. The Sadguru is putting the sadhaka to the test, and here he has come under the delusion that he is still is a Jivatma and is searching for Brahmajnana. And he goes, and whom does he meet? When he reaches Kishkindha, that is when Sri Rama reaches Kishkindha, he has to meet two people actually.
Yes.
In a sense, there are two forces that play in Kishkindha. One force is Vali, another force is Sugriva. And Swami says, Vali represents Dukkha or agony or despair. And Sugriva represents discrimination or Viveka. Right? And this is usually the case. When we get into such situations in our sadhana, it's very easy to get into dukkha or despair.
Just give in to the despair.
Yeah, give in to the... It's the most easiest thing. But in order to kind of utilize our viveka or discriminative power, we need tremendous courage.
Yes.
Without courage, we cannot use the discriminative power, because it is going to lead on to further difficult path ahead.
Correct.
Despair is very easy. I can say, oh, poor me, why does it happen to me? And, you know, why everything bad happens only to me? These kind of feelings and emotions, it's very easy to give in to. And you get stuck in a loop of such emotions and you never get out of it. And the whole life goes away in this manner. But here in Ramayana, there's a beautiful analogy which Swami gives. And he says, when this tussle, the opposites of despair and discrimination, face each other, what you need is courage to choose viveka over dukkha.
Yes.
That is to choose discrimination over despair. And that courage is Hanuman. Hanuman is the one who takes Rama and Lakshmana towards Sugriva, who represents discrimination here. And that viveka further enables them to actually discover the whereabouts of Mother Sita and where she is kept in Lanka. And they build this bridge. And Swami describes here beautifully how this bridge is built, with what all forces. It is built with the intellect, that is Lakshmana. It is built with courage, which is Hanuman. It is built with zeal, which is Jambavan. Strength, which is Angada, and steadfastness, which is represented by the entire Vanar Sena. And the bridge is built over what? It is built over the ocean of Bhranti, Swami says, delusion.
Yes.
This delusion is what? Delusion is to think that I am not the self. I am not Atma Rama. That is the delusion. So the bridge was being built over this Bhranti, or the ocean of delusion. And once Sri Rama reaches the other side, with all these efforts, he vanquishes Rajoguna, represented by Ravana, and Tamoguna, represented by Kumbhakarna, once and for all. And he crowns Vibhishana.
Who is the Sattvaguna?
Who is the representative of Sattvaguna? Of course, we have discussed gunas in detail in the previous episode, what they represent. And here, Ravana's tendency was, his rajasic vrittis, he was kind of taking help of tamasic forces to fulfill. Correct. Instead of transforming them into sattvic energies, like how Mother Ahalya could do it. But unfortunately, though Ravana was given those opportunities, he did not utilize, and his rajasic energies and his vrittis, he clubbed it with his tamasic qualities, and it led to his own destruction. And that is how the Rajoguna and Tamoguna were permanently vanquished, which means only Sattvaguna, which will lead up to Shuddha Sattvam. Shuddha Sattvam here means, in practical understanding, somebody whose vrittis or thoughts are all the time only on Loka Kalyana and others' welfare. Even for a moment, he will not think about himself. So that is a kind of a reflection or the behavioral manifestation of somebody who has reached that state of Shuddha Sattvam. And here, Sri Rama crowns Vibhishana, that is Sattva Guna is crowned as supreme, and Rajoguna and Tamoguna are completely vanquished after the war. But then, here Lakshmana asks Rama, why don't you settle down here?
Yes.
It's such a beautiful golden city, isn't it? Why don't you settle down here? And Rama replies that, you know, it is a very famous quote.
Janani janma bhumischa swargadavi gariyasi.
Exactly. So Rama says, mother and motherland are greater than heaven. Janani janma bhumischa swargadavi gariyasi. In spiritual parlance, how do you understand this? Lanka here represents the materialistic world.
True.
That is the world which is perceived by the body and the senses. And here what Sri Rama has done is, he has removed rajasic and tamasic forces and he has crowned a sattvic force, which means the physical body in its interaction with the world and the worldly will only manifest sattvic tendencies in such a sadhaka. But then the physical world and the worldly material are not his real home.
True.
His original abode is where he came from. In a spiritual parlance, from that sat, the whole creation has come into, including the idea of Jivatma. And now this Jivatma has to go back home to his original self. And how that happens? Moment Vibhishana is crowned, Sita returns to Sri Rama, which means Brahmajnana has come back into his into his being. And now with that Brahmajnana, he knows that there is nothing called Jivatma, there is only Paramatma. And that he is divinity himself, he is the Atma Rama. So this Sita Rama or the Atma Rama or Sachitananda now dwells in its original abode, which is Ayodhya, represented in the story as Ayodhya. And the Pattabhishekam happens. And Swami says, this Pattabhishekam is Jivan Mukti, which is a permanent state. And as Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita, yad gatva nani vartante tad dhama paramam mama. That is my supreme abode, having reached which there is no point of return. You cannot return. The first was a first level of realization which was given by Sadguru, and this Jivatma, this individual sadhaka was tested. And after he won his test, by taking the company of courage and viveka and buddhi, and with zeal and strength and steadfastness, he could vanquish his rajoguna and tamoguna permanently and crown sattvaguna in his moral attitudes and practice in the world. At that point, the Sadguru, being extremely pleased with the sadhaka, confers on him this Pattabhishekam, which is Jivan Mukti. Why is it Pattabhishekam? Patta means a post. Abhisheka means to be anointed or to be coronated in the post. What is the post that is being coronated? The post that is being coronated is Videha Mukti, or you can also call it as Jivan Mukti. Jivan Mukti is the post that is being coronated. That is, his post of being the Parabrahman is sealed. Means there is no point of return from there for the sadhak. He will never get deluded again. There is no question of Brahmajnana leaving him, because he himself is Brahmajnana. He himself is Brahman. And at that point, he is established in that truth. And that truth, which never left him actually, he was only deluded into believing that it is gone. But now it is at such a level of conviction, at such a level of experiential truth, And that is why Swami has used the word here. In the second half of the whole story, Swami says that Sita is Anubhava Jnana.
Yes.
That is, experiential realization of who I really am.
And that, in a nutshell, is the Atma Ramayana. In fact, Swami says in Sandeha Nivarini, the end of 13th chapter, Swami concludes by saying, the Lord is teaching this even to this day. The Lord performed that day the gross Ramayana, and today He is performing the subtle or Sukshma Ramayana on the stage of the hearts of people.
Rama Jayam, Raghu Rama Jayam, Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam.
Rama Jayam, Raghu Rama Jayam, Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam.
Rama Mayam, Raghu Rama Mayam, Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam.
Rama Mayam, Raghu Rama Mayam,
Ravi Kula Dasharatha Sukha Puta Mitram Rama Jayam Raghu Rama Jayam Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam
Sri Rama Jayam Raghu Rama Jayam Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam
Rama Sita Pati Raghava Mantram
Rama Sita Pati Raghava Mantram
Ramyami Guna Jana Seva Nirantram
Ramyami Guna Jana Seva Nirantram
Rama Daya Para Parama Pavitram
Rama Daya Para Parama Pavitram
Ravi Kula Dasharatha Sukhamita Mitram Dasharatha Sukha Puta Mitram
Rama Jayam Raghu Rama Jayam Raghava Jnaname Lokamayam.
In fact, as Adi Shankara says, for such a person who has realized this in a permanent way, he has written a beautiful verse in Bhajagovindam where he says, Yogaratova, Bhogaratova, Sangaratova, Sangavihinaha, Tasya Brahmani Ramate Chittam, Nandati Nandati Nandatyeva. It means, Yogaratova, Bhogaratova. He might seem externally as a yogi or as a bhogi. Sangaratova, Sangavihinaha. He might be in company or he might be alone. Secluded like many sages in the Himalayas, or he might be moving amongst people like a common man. Tasya Brahmani Ramate Chittam, one's whose identity is completely dissolved in his true self, which is Brahman, Nandati Nandati Nandatyeva, he will be a fountain of bliss within. He will be Satchitananda Swarupa, which he already is, and that will be the permanent identity which he will never lose. As Krishna said, Yadgatvana Nivartante Taddhama Paramam Mama. There is no point of return from there. So his external attitudes could be different. You will see him in different ways. But then internally he is pure Satchitananda. He'll be a fountain of bliss all the time. Nandati Nandati Nandatyeva. That's what Adi Shankaracharya describes of a person who has achieved such Jivan Mukti.
And then Atma Rama becomes the Ananda Ramana.
Absolutely. In fact, that bhajan encompasses this whole Atma Ramayana. The beautiful bhajan of Atma Rama, Ananda Ramana.
Yes.
Right? How it in fact traces the journey of the creation. Atma Rama is the source, the Adi Purusha. Ananda Ramana. right? How did he experience Ananda? Because he created awareness of himself by creating prakriti, that is chit, or awareness, consciousness. He created that chit from himself, by himself. And that Atma Rama became Ananda Ramana. He began to love himself. As Swami said, I divided myself from myself to love myself. That is the Ananda Ramana. Achyuta. Achyuta means the one who is unchangeable. Just like the screen, the white screen. He is unchangeable. Right? He is, such a person is called Achyuta. Keshava. Keshava here represents one who is beyond Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara and as well as them as well.
Mm-hmm.
That is, he is Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, yet he is beyond them. Which means, he is the creation, yet he is beyond the creation as well. Achyuta Keshava, Hari Narayana. He is Hari. Hari has a very beautiful inner meaning. The meaning of Hari is, jo sabko har leta hai. That is, that which consumes everything within itself. Means, mm-hmm. in him, there is nothing. There is nothing beyond him. And he, what it really means is, we have three states of existence, right? Jagrata, that is the waking state. We have Swapna, which is the dream state. And Sushupti, which is the deep sleep state. This Hari encompasses all these states, which means he is much beyond all these. And even the fourth, which is Turiya. Turiya literally means the fourth state, which okay. is beyond the deep sleep state. And which is very close to the understanding of chit or consciousness or mula prakriti. And he is beyond even that state and hence he is Hari.
Yes.
Jo sabko har leta hai. There is no state in him. That's what it means. He is beyond all states and he consumes all states. That is when somebody realizes that he is Hari, there are no states in him. You know, Hari Narayana. Here is it's a very beautiful word here, Narayana. Usually the imagery goes of, you know, the Milky Ocean and Ananta Shayana, yes. and, you know, the Lord there sleeping on it, reclining on it. But it is all very symbolic. Swami says the meaning, another meaning of Narayana in an Adhyatmic context is Nara is Prakriti. Nara is basically plural, which means the entire cosmos, creation. Ayana means the basis, that which is the basis of the entire creation. So Achyuta, the unchangeable one, Keshava, who became Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwara, who is Hari, at the same time he is beyond them, he has no states in them, no dual sense of duality, Narayana, he became the basis of the entire creation. Isn't it? Bhava Bhaya Harana, then what he does, in his own creation he takes an avataric form. Like our most beloved Bhagwan, he, in his own creation, he takes an avataric form. For what? Bhava Bhaya Harana. So those who are deluded into thinking that they are many and they are separate from him, they're all dwelling in fear all the time. Fear of death, fear of birth. Swami says, you know, Bhatuku Bhayam, and you know, everything is a state of fear.
Yes.
You fear even fear. You know, so that's a beautiful poem which Swami says about fear. And so when people are living in such fear of insecurity, not knowing that they themselves are Sachitananda, he comes there as Bhava Bhaya Harana to remove that fear. For whom? Vandita Charana, those who are ready to follow his footsteps. Raghukula Bhushana, those who follow his footsteps, what does he do? Raghukula Bhushana, which means Raghu is the sun. And sun is the deity of the intellect. Raghukula Bhushana means those who follow his footsteps, he raises their intellect to the level of its supreme state, where it is closest to its atmic reality. So Raghukula Bhushana, he grants that, you know, Swami materializes so many gifts for all of us, but the greatest gift, the greatest jewel which Swami has materialized is this title of Raghukula Bhushana. That is to raise our intellect to such spiritual heights where it is able to merge with the consciousness or the self and help us understand and experience who we really are. Raghukula Bhushana, Rajiva Nayana, the lotus-eyed one. It is again has got a very deep inner meaning. Rajiva Nayana means the one whose perception is like a lotus, that is, he is in the world but not of the world. His perception of the world, Nayana, I here is a representative of his, the way he perceives the world. Rajiva here is the lotus. So, the lotus here represents that his perception of a world, whose intellect is like Raghukula Bhushana, his perception of the world will be like the lotus, that is, though he will live in the world, none of the muck of the world, the dirt of the world, will never touch his pristine self. His perception will always remain above the world and the material, physical world. And his perception will always be, I am in the world, but I am not of this world. So, Adi Narayana Ananta Shayana, he is that Adi Purusha, who has become Narayana, that is, who is the basis of this whole creation, Ananta Shayana. He is verily time itself, which determines the way things happen in this creation. Ananta means eternal. He is that eternal. He reclines on that. In fact, I remember in one poem, Swami was referring how a poet described him as not Satya Sai, but Satya Shyai, that is the one who reclines on truth, you know.
Yes.
So he is like that Ananta Shayana, he reclines on eternity. Satchitananda Sai Narayana, his real name and real form is Satchitananda, which is our true nature. He is Satya Sai, he is verily the basis of the entire creation. Let us remember this, contemplate on this beautiful bhajan, and make this journey to understanding experientially, to earn this anubhavjanya jnana or anubhava jnana of who we really are. And when once we do that, with all the tools that are provided in Ramayana, then what happens is, manushatvam, mumukshatvam, mahapurusha samashrayaha, Sadguru himself will come and confer his grace on us, and for us to realize that we are Atma Rama and not the Jivatma.
Yes, beautiful.
Atma Rama Ananda Ramana. Atma Rama Ananda Ramana. Achyut Keshava Hari Narayana. Achyut Keshava Hari Narayana. Bhava Bhaya Harana Vandita Charana. Raghukula Bhushana Rajiva Nayana. Raghukula Bhushana Rajiva Nayana. Adi Narayana Ananta Shayana. Sachidananda Sai Narayana. Sachidananda Sai Narayana. Atma Rama Ananda Ramana. Achyut Keshava Hari Narayana. Bhava Bhaya Harana Vandita Charana. Raghupula Bhushana ರಾಜೀವನಯನ ಆದಿನಾರಾಯಣ ಆನಂದ ಶಯನ ಸಚಿದಾನಂದ ಸಾಯಿ ನಾರಾಯಣ ಸಚಿದಾನಂದ ಸಾಯಿ ನಾರಾಯಣ ಆತ್ಮ ರಾಮ ಆನಂದ ರಮಣ.
ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಡಿಯರ್ ಲಿಸ್ನರ್ಸ್. Till now we were discussing about the Atma Ramayana, the story of Ramayana that is being played in each and every one of our lives. That story comes to an end when the Jivatma, with the help of Anubhava Jnana, realizes that it is indeed the Paramatma. And with the time that we have left, we are going to discuss another aspect of this story of Ramayana. Swami in Ramkatha Rasavahini also says that Rama, Bharata, Lakshmana and Shatrughna represent the four Purusharthas, that is Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. So Brother Giridhar, how does this fit in to the story?
Well, Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, these four are considered as Purusharthas in the Sanatana Dharma. And the ancient scriptures describe dharma, artha, kama, moksha as four steps sometimes to the fulfillment of human life. They are sometimes referred to as goals of life. But the deeper meaning of these four beautiful aspects of life is really amazing. And in Ramayana you find that these four brothers who are in perfect harmony, they represent these four qualities of dharma, artha, kama and moksha. Let's first try to get an idea about what these four words really mean. Dharma, we have heard elaborately on it, and most of Swami's devotees who have read Dharma Vahini and, you know, other discourses of Bhagwan are familiar with the word dharma as righteousness.
Yes.
Right? And artha, the literal meaning is wealth.
Yes.
And kama means desire and moksha means liberation. This is the usual understanding of the four words, dharma, artha, kama, moksha. And Swami says that it is important to understand these four words in correct relationship. That is, in one individual's life, dharma and artha should be together, kama and moksha should be together. It means that the artha, wealth that is required for various things, wealth means not just the physical wealth, that is money, it means the intellectual wealth, the spiritual wealth, even the gross material wealth that we need to live our day-to-day life, all of it must be earned in dharmic ways. That is, righteousness has to be the basis of earning wealth. And we have stellar examples in the Puranas, in the Itihasas, the epics, where if the wealth was not earned in a proper way, we have seen how it can lead to great destruction and dismay at the end.
Yes.
Two classic examples I can think of. One person who did not put into use the artha which he earned in a proper way. The other person who did not gain the artha in righteous way, right? The first person I am talking about is Ravana. Ravana was master of 64 art forms.
Mm.
In fact, Swami says Rama was only a master of 32 or 34 art forms. But Ravana was a master of all 64 art forms. There is no art form, there is no skill that he did not master. He was not just jack of all trades, he was master of all trades. Yet, we all have seen how Ravana had scripted his own decline.
Yes.
Isn't it? Because though this knowledge was available, though this artha, the wealth of knowledge, wisdom was available to him in the form of various shastras and art forms, he did not put them to proper use. He did not righteously contribute to the world with whatever talents that he had gained. Rather, he used them for his own selfish gains And Swami very beautifully describes, he delayed in kind of fulfilling his noble aspirations. He had many noble aspirations. Some of them are, you know, he wanted to convert the whole ocean into sweet drinking water, so that there will be no water problem in the world, you know. And he had another aspiration that he wanted to build a ladder to the heaven.
Okay, yes.
You know, these were some, basically what that ladder to the heaven in my understanding means, he wanted to build a very simple route to happiness or pleasantness and pleasure, which is more sustaining in nature. So when all these good thoughts were there in him, he never did anything. He did not put to use the artha that he had gained for the benefit of mankind by implementing this. Rather, whatever bad thoughts he had, for example, when Shurpanaka describes the beauty of Mother Sita, he is immediately enamored, and without delay, he implements the abduction of Mother Sita.
Yes.
So in this way, he had lost track of what is righteous action, and as a result, he had misused the artha. And Ravana is a classic example of improper relationship between the four Purusharthas. That is, Swami says, if you leave aside dharma and moksha, you are left with the combination of artha and kama.
Yes.
This artha kama, that is desire and desire for the material, and having abundance of material with lots of desires. You know,
it's the most deadly combination.
It is the most dangerous combination, which was the perfect recipe for Ravana. And that was the reason why Ravana's decline was imminent.
Because I think also the wealth that Ravana amassed.
Mm-hmm.
There was a story where Ravana had a war with Kubera and
his
stole
brother,
his wealth.
Yes.
His brother Kubera and
yes.
took away his wealth.
Yes.
So I think even the way he amassed most of the material wealth
yes.
was in the dharmic way.
Yeah, dharmic way. That's very true. So because the way he amasses wealth was unrighteous, and also the way he put it into use, or rather he didn't put it into use, was also, you know, not a dharmic way to lead a life.
Yes.
You
yes.
know. And as a result, he combined artha and kama, which led to his decline. The other classic example I was talking about is Karna from the Mahabharata. We all know that Karna was rejected at every level of the society, saying that because he was from a lower class of the society, he was not eligible to the knowledge or the education which was the privilege of the upper class or the Kshatriya clan. While his talents were many and he was extremely skilled and extremely able person, sheerly in the name of his class, he was not given the chance. But then what he did was, when he finally was rejected by everybody, including Dronacharya, he goes to Parashurama. And sage Parashurama had taken a vow that he will teach only Brahmins.
Yes.
Because he wanted to kind of uplift this whole Brahmin community to the sense that they can defend themselves. At that point of time, they had become really weak. The Kshatriyas were too powerful in the society. So in order to bring a balance, he wanted to teach only Brahmins. And Karna tells him a lie that, you know, I am a Brahmin. And he learns all the archery and other allied warfare techniques and art forms from the great teacher Parashurama himself. One day it happens that sage Parashurama was lying down on Karna's lap, and a scorpion came by. In some versions it's a bee, whichever way, it stung Karna, and he started bleeding. And because he's a Kshatriya, he was able to bear the pain, and he did not want to disturb the sleep of sage Parashurama.
Yes.
But when sage Parashurama got up, he saw that, in fact, the blood which was flowing from his thigh touched him, and, you know, that was what kind of brought him out of the sleep. And he got up and saw all this blood, and he was wondering where it is coming from, and he saw that Karna's thigh was injured. And at that moment, he knew that Karna cannot be a Brahmin, because it is said that only Kshatriyas can have such sahan shakti, that is, such
high
forbearance
yes.
Against physical injury.
Yes.
You know, Brahmins usually don't have, that's what is said. Parashurama immediately recognizes that he cannot be a Brahmin, so he questions him there. And immediately Karna confides with him and says he is actually, you know, from a lower class of society and all that, and he told him this lie that he's a Brahmin sheerly because he did not know any other way out. And what Parashurama says, it is usually portrayed that Parashurama curses him at that point of time. But I saw a very nice version of Mahabharata where the way they portrayed it is like Parashurama says to Karna, what I am pronouncing now is not really a curse. It's simply a result of your action.
Yes.
And he says, the curse actually is that when the intense time of need comes for him, of this particular art forms and the vidya that he has gained from Parashurama, the archery skills and all the mantras for the sacred weapons, all those he will forget when he is in dire need, in the most important occasion of his life. And it happens that way when he is faced against
Arjuna
in the Mahabharata battle. He doesn't remember any of his chants, his mantras for invoking the
Divya
powerful
astras.
Divya astras and the arrows. Parashurama simply says, the reason for this is very obvious. It's not that I am cursing you out of disgust or something like that. If you have not earned something righteously, it cannot help you in the best of your moments. It will leave you one day or the other.
Mm.
Because life in its journey is actually taking you forward towards dharma, towards ultimate fulfillment. So what happens is all that is earned in a negative way. In fact, at this time in life where Swami has said that the golden age is imminent and we are moving towards Ramarajya or golden age, one might find in their life that they are losing many things. It could be material wealth, it could be relationships, some other kinds of, personal wealth as well, which were not accumulated in righteous ways. And you might find that you're losing them without any reason. The reason for that is because we are moving to a more purer state of being. Anything that is accumulated in an unrighteous way have to leave us at this
point
of time.
It's a good thing that you are losing them in one way.
It is, unless you're sure that it is your carelessness that was the reason for you to lose that thing. But these kind of things are also happening. That's what I'm trying to say. Karna was a classical example of that because he accumulated vidya, the artha, the wealth of knowledge in unrighteous manner, and he could not put it to use when he wanted to.
Yes.
So that is a natural outcome of accumulating wealth in unrighteous way. So that is how important dharma artha is, that is to accumulate wealth in a dharmic way. In practical life. And of course, kama moksha, we cannot emphasize enough. Swami says that the only desire that you should have in life is for moksha, for liberation. So in fact, Swami says, first you move your desires from worldly desires to godly desires.
Yes.
Desire for God first, then you have to desire to be desireless. That is kama moksha. And this dharma, artha, kama, moksha, in this combination is a secret of success in human endeavor. That is dharma and artha, kama and moksha. So the four personalities of Ramayana, in fact Rama himself is a perfect example of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, while Ravana on the contrary is example of how he gave emphasis on artha, kama, forgot about dharma and also forgot about moksha. For the last part.
Well, there is a version of, I think in Adhyatma Ramayana, it is there that Ravana knew that Rama is God and his salvation lies in the fact of getting killed in the hands of Rama.
Hmm.
So from that perspective, Ravana had his eyes on moksha, I guess. Hmm.
This version, of course, is there, and I have come across this particular version. But when I come to the point as to what really moksha is, then this this particular point which you're making, which is so important in the context of understanding moksha, will become very clear. So that context is like this. Basically, dharma, artha, kama, moksha have inner meanings. Each of the words have inner meanings, which is very close to what a sadhaka wants to know in a practical sense.
Okay.
In the sense, see, if you tell somebody dharma, artha, kama, moksha, it seems like some unearthly and some extraordinary esoteric principle,
yes, yes.
Which might be very difficult to practice. But there are inner meanings to these four words, which are pretty simple to understand and very much practical in one's sadhana. And I think we can spend some time on the inner meanings of these four words. For example, dharma, the word dharma also means dharana.
Mm-hmm.
Dharana and dharma, like dharti or dhara, which means earth, has got a root word in Sanskrit. The root for all these words is dhru dhatu.
Okay.
Dhru means, if I have to convey it in Hindi, dhru means dharan karna, means that which bears.
Yes.
Or that which you kind of uphold, or you accept, and you kind of carry on your shoulder. You know, that is the kind of feel that you get from this word, which starts with the dhru dhatu, whose foundation is the dhru dhatu. And dhru basically means dharan karna.
Okay.
That is why dharti is known to bear all of us,
yes.
You know, with all our vagaries and everything. Whatever we do, Mother Earth is known to have immense tolerance. She bears all of us, right? So that is one sense of bearing. But in this case of dharma, artha, kama, moksha, the dhru dhatu, which means dharma, also conveys the inner meaning of dharana. Dharana means that which I take upon or I accept with a sankalpa to do. What okay. is that? Dharana of noble thoughts and good feelings. Whenever there is a good thought, a noble thought, good feeling, which is meant for welfare of others, which is meant for welfare of the world, such noble thoughts alone I should accept.
Hmm.
Like Swami says, if you have a bad thought, just give it some time. Means we were just discussing in the context of Ravana all these things.
Yes.
If you have a bad thought, just give it some time because it will come and go away. But if you have a good thought, immediately accept it and put it into action.
Yes, yes.
Right? So dharana means this. Dharana means noble actions, satkarmas. When thoughts associated with good actions, noble actions, divine actions, satkarmas come in our mind, immediately we have to own it up. Dharan karna means we have to uphold them immediately. The next aspect is artha. Artha here means yatharth ko sarthak karna.
Mm-hmm.
Yatharth means that noble thought which is there in me now, or that noble feeling which I have nurtured in me now,
okay.
at this point of time, usko sarthak karna means I have to fulfill it. I'll have to put it into action and immediately manifest that thought in action. And for that, sometimes I might need some physical wealth also. So to earn the appropriate kind of wealth, whatever it is, it might be, say, there is an attitude of seva which has come. I want to serve the village children. And that is a good thought, a noble
yes.
thought, which I have accepted. I have, you know, dharan, that is to uphold that thought. Now I have accepted that thought and I am nurturing that thought. Right? The next point is, I have to now put it into action. So for that, whatever wealth, physical wealth I need to gather, it could be physical wealth, it could be knowledge. For example, if I am to teach them science in a village school, whatever required knowledge I need to gather and keep with me, I need to do that. So
yes.
whatever wealth, whichever form of wealth is required for fulfilling this noble thought or desire has to be accumulated by us or earned by us in a righteous way, of course. And then the third aspect comes, kama. Kama, usually many commentators give the meaning as kam vasana, that is either desire or lustful desire, which is not the correct meaning of kama. Kama actually means to desire to be a mahant. That is, in one's life, one's ambition should be a mahatma or mahant, a great individual. In that greatness means you are seeking perfection. In that seeking for perfection, one's refinement happens. So that desire should be there, that in whatever field I am working, I have to attain heights of perfection in that field. So kama here means that. Kama to be a mahapurusha, where one reaches such a level of excellence in that field. See, while there are many goals in life, each one might have different goals in their life, but in this process of seeking perfection, the refinement that happens will ultimately lead them to realization. So that refinement, though whichever physical path the body might take, that refinement is what is most important. And for that refinement, there has to be a desire for supreme excellence.
Yes.
In whatever we do. So kama here is that desire to be a very noble person, to be a mahatma, to be excellent, to excel in whatever we aspire to do. Moksha here will now bring clarity to the question that you have asked. Moksha means, as Bhagavan describes, mohakshayam, means to destroy all sense of attachment.
Yes.
Now the question is, attachment to what, from what? Attachment here means all sense of identification to body and mind. Like the King Janaka, we all know the famous story where King Janaka one day just slipped into sleep even as he was reclining on his bed, and he saw a terrible dream, a nightmare. And in that, King Janaka was relaxing and he was very casual about things, and his enemies noticed that he's not very alert these days, and they decided to attack him. And he was kind of caught unawares, and the enemy easily overcame his soldiers and his defense. And they were quick to conquer his kingdom, and they reached his palace as well. So King Janaka had to flee from his palace from the back gates, and he roamed from street to street in his kingdom begging for food, because there's nobody to feed him anymore. So he would go and knock at the doors of people, and they would open and they would recognize him to be Janaka and immediately tell him that he is not fit to be served any food, because he has left them in the hands of enemies instead of protecting them, which was his dharma.
Mm-hmm.
So they deny him any food, and that way he goes from house to house rejected, and they start chasing him. So he runs into the forest, and in the forest he is completely struck by hunger and thirst. He is starving, and he sees a sadhu in whose hand there is a pot of payasam, and he goes and begs from him for that payasam. And he says, see, I have already partook, the sage says, I have already partook of this payasam. So since, in Hindi we say it's jhuta, right? It's already consumed by me. I cannot give it to you. It's not dharmic. I will incur sin by making an offering which is polluted. That is how he says. And then Janaka, who himself is very wise, he knew all aspects of dharma. He says, there is something called apad dharma. And in apad dharma, that is emergency dharma, when somebody is starving, it doesn't matter what kind of food. If the food can satiate his hunger, it is good enough. So you will be free from all such sins. You please offer this food to me, he says. And that food was, the sage says, he agrees and he gives the bowl of payasam to him. And even as he is about to partake that kheer or payasam, two wild boars, of course there are different versions of this story. In one version, an eagle comes. In another version, there is a dog which comes by. I like this interesting version of two wild boars which, was fighting with each other, and in their fight and clash, they come and knock Janaka's hand. And this whole earthen pot with payasam actually flies and crashes into the soil and becomes one with the soil. And in that intense starvation, hunger and thirst, he cries out. And as he is crying out, he just wakes up from his sleep. And to his utter surprise, he sees he is sleeping on, he is reclining on a golden bed with hundreds of sevaks for him. And there is a entire cuisine of all kinds of food material, food kept in front of him. And that kind of sparks a question in his mind. Is that true or is this true? Kya wo sat hai ya ye sat? Is that true or is this true? This question, of course, the story is very elaborate. To come to the finale of the story, sage Ashtavakra, who was a 10-year-old boy, he comes to King Janaka, and he is the one who relieves him of this predicament. And King Janaka asks him this question, is that true or is this true? And sage Ashtavakra, then a 10-year-old boy, I would like to re-emphasize that, a 10-year-old sage, you know, enlightens the grand wise king, and he says, neither that is true nor this is true.
Mm.
You know, and then eventually Janaka loses all his attachment to the world. Intense vairagya builds in him, and the only thing that he wants to know is, then what is this satya? What is this truth? And then sage Ashtavakra gives him a direct experiential knowledge of what is this satya, and he says, neither that is true nor this is true. Let me explain to you. And he says, see, if truth is that which does not change with three periods of time, whether it's past, present or future, in any kind of deshakala paristhiti, that is in with respect to place, time and the circumstance, truth will never change. It's one and the same.
Mm-hmm.
So if you apply this definition of truth to what happened in these two instances, in one instance you were starving like a beggar without food, and that was the apparent reality for you at that point of time. If that was truth, how can you be a king with all luxuries now? It should not change with deshakala paristhiti. It should not change with time or your state of existence, whether it is deep sleep state, whether it is dream state or in waking state. In all three states, truth remains the same. So if your beggary was truth, then how could you be the king now? And he says, if you're being a king now with all your riches is the truth, how could you be a beggar in your dream state? It cannot change. So he says, neither that is truth nor this is truth. Truth is the one who was present as a constant witness to both the dream as well as this waking state.
Mm.
So then sage Ashtavakra, of course these were not told in words, he gave him a direct realization of the fact that he is neither the body nor the mind. And it is said that King Janaka asks sage Ashtavakra, I hear that truth is so simple to realize that it can be as fast as if I put my one leg onto my horse, before I put the other leg to climb onto the horse completely, it will happen. Is it true? And Ashtavakra says, you want to know this? Get me a horse. And he gets a horse and he puts one leg, and by the time he puts the other leg on the other side, Ashtavakra has already given him the realization of who he really is. Mm. It happens in an instant.
Yes.
In such a fraction of time. And what does he realize after that? He realizes that he is not the body, he is not the mind. So whatever is left, that is what he is. In fact, once I had asked Bhagwan this question, Swami, how to get rid of this ego? I feel this is what is separating you from I. What? How do I get rid of this? Swami said, it's very simple. He said, where is this ego? I said, Swami, in the mind. Then Swami said, remove the mind, it will go away. So I said, Swami, but how to remove the mind? Swami said, see, I am not this body. I am not this mind. Where is the place for I? Moment there is an anubhava jnana.
Mm, yes.
That is an experiential realization of this truth, of who I am, which is a separate entity from both the body and mind. That realization, that anubhava jnana, then is called videha mukti. The moksha referred to dharma artha kama moksha here. That moksha is this videha mukti. And videha mukti means to recognize I am not this body and I am not this mind, not intellectually, not in words, but in experiential reality which Sadguru alone
yes.
can confer.
Yes.
So if we put genuine effort in dharana of noble thoughts, in making such thoughts sarthak, that is fulfilling such noble thoughts in performance of satkarmas without any expectation, without any sense of doership, if we are able to do such seva, such karmas, and with the aspiration of attaining perfection in whatever field we are, in that way refining our inner self all the time, if this kind of effort is put, we earn enough sadhana. Sadhana means, sa here means divinity. Swami says, sa word represents divinity. Dhana means wealth. So sadhana literally means divine wealth.
Yes.
So if we have earned enough sadhana and the account balance is high enough and the yearning is intense enough, kama moksha, that is yearning, the desire for mohakshaya is intense enough, then the Sadguru will himself shower that grace which Ashtavakra, who was the Sadguru of King Janaka, he showered that grace on him. And in that instant he realized that he is neither the body nor the mind.
Yes.
And that state where you recognize in all clarity, in perfect understanding, in experiential wisdom, anubhava jnana of the truth that I am and I am not this body and mind, that state is called videha mukti, and that is the moksha which is referred to here in Dharma Artha Kama Moksha.
So with that, let's take a short break. Dear listeners, we'll be back after this short break. And when we are back, we will see how in Ramayana, Rama, Bharata, Lakshmana and Shatrughna represent these four Purusharthas.
Karuna Sindho Dasharath Nandana Partipurishwara
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 Prema Swarupa Prashanti Niketana Maruti Sevitara
Prema Swarupa Prashanti Niketana Maruti Sevitara
Prema Swarupa Prashanti Niketana Maruti Sevitara
Swarupa Prashanti Niketana Maruti Sevitara
Ahalyudharaka Rajivalochana Raghukula Bhushanara
Ahalyudharaka Rajivalochana
Welcome back, dear listeners. In the studios with me is Brother Sai Giridhar, and today we are discussing as to how the four brothers in Ramayana, Rama, Bharata, Lakshmana and Shatrughna, how they represent the four Purusharthas, Dharma, Artha, Kama and Moksha. So over to Brother Sai Giridhar.
Swami, when he describes the four personalities of Rama, Lakshmana, Bharata and Shatrughna as Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, Bhagavan very clearly says that the Dharma he refers to here is Atma Dharma. Rama represents that Atma Dharma.
Yes.
And all the other aspects are but in tune to attain this Atma Dharma. That is, Artha, Kama and Moksha is nothing but to realize the Atma Dharma. Like we just discussed, Moksha means Mohakshaya,
yes,
which means to realize that I am not the body and I am not this mind. So whatever is left, that is what I am. And that realization of who I am is Atma Dharma. So Artha and Kama also similarly reflect the same thing. What is Artha with reference to Atma Dharma? That wealth which I need to acquire in order to be qualified to earn Atma Dharma from Sadguru's grace. So how to earn Sadguru's grace is represented by Artha
mm-hmm.
and also by Kama. But let's look at Artha here. And Lakshmana is, say, the representative of this Artha. He gives a perfect example of how one should be in order to earn Sadguru's grace to realize this Atma Dharma. Lakshmana, in an incident where the three of them, Rama, Sita and Lakshmana, were in Panchavati, and Sri Rama says to Lakshmana, find one, I think this is in Chitrakuta.
Okay.
And Sri Rama tells Lakshmana, find an appropriate location and build an hermitage for us wherever you want.
Yes.
So immediately Lakshmana is stunned and he is filled with remorse and he almost starts weeping. And Rama is quite surprised by this emotion of Lakshmana and he asks, why are you like this? What happened? Did I tell something wrong? He says, no brother, I might have done some great sin. I must have done some very big mistake for you think that I have a will of my own.
Yes.
He says, my dearest brother Rama, have I ever shown this ego or some kind of a attitude that I have my own will? Did I do that mistake any time? Because all I know is your will is my command. And whatever is your will, to put it into action is my command. And Lakshmana starts weeping, holding Rama's hand and saying that, don't ever punish me like this, brother. Don't make me feel that I have a will of my own. Mm. Whatever is your will, that alone is my will. This one incident is enough to convey the meaning of Artha. As we discuss the inner meanings of Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, Artha also meant those noble intentions to be fulfilled. That is, to fulfill those noble intentions, or Sarthak.
Yes.
Sa Artha or Sarthak Karna is the meaning of Artha. And in this case, Lakshmana always followed his Atma Dharma. Atma Dharma in practical life, in simple terms, means to follow the voice of your conscience.
Yes.
In absolute terms, Atma Dharma means to know that I am I. But in simple practical sadhaka's terms, Atma Dharma means to follow the voice of your conscience. And what Lakshmana was saying here is, have I ever followed my mind? Have I ever done the mistake of thinking on my own and doing whatever I wanted to, based on physicality of the world and the information I gained from it? He says, all that I have ever executed was your will, my Lord.
Yes.
And that will of Lord is nothing but the voice of the conscience. He was so much in tune with the voice of conscience. Another proof of that is when Shurpanaka attacks Mother Sita in order to eat her up and marry Rama in turn, Rama simply points towards the sky and shows four fingers. Lakshmana immediately goes and cuts off the nose and ears of Shurpanaka. Now, if somebody were to do this to me, even if they verbally tell what it is, it will take me some time to understand.
Yes, yes.
And here was Lakshmana, a single indication towards the sky and four fingers. And he knew what he had to do. He cut off the nose and ears. How would you understand this? Because of his intense tuning with the Lord. He was so one with Rama all the time that when the Lord pointed towards the sky name in Sanskrit is also Naka.
Okay.
Naka also means nose.
Nose, yes.
Right? And there is another meaning. The sky is also ether. Ether's nature is sound. Sound is the quality of, means the only thing that permeates in ether is sound. So sound is the quality of the sky, of space. And that sound has been categorized in four ways. That is Shrutis, that is Vedas. And those Vedas are called Shrutis. Shrutis means that which you hear.
Yes, okay.
So hearing is a quality of sound, means it's a perceptibility of sound. So he gathered all these things in a single gesture and knew that he had to cut off the nose and the ear of Shurpanaka. This is only possible if the sadhaka is fully tuned. You know, I like this comment made by Dr. Sola in one of his talks, where he says, the first time he visited Prashanthinilayam, he would see these boys who were seated around Swami. so intensely focused on Swami. The slightest glance which Swami gives, they are to understand what is to be done. Whether to take Swami inside or whether Swami wants water, the fan has to be turned off or call somebody, everything in a glance.
Yes, yes.
And that is the greatest learning for a sadhaka. Just as how these boys were focused on Swami in the physical form outside, it is important for every sadhaka to focus his attention intensely to the indications. The physical Swami's glance itself was subtle, but the cosmic Swami who resides in every heart is even more subtler. And hence, it requires intense focus and attention on our own heart, on our hridaya, to understand what does Swami really want? What does Swami want us to do? So that was the nature of Lakshmana. Constantly he was in tune with Rama and he was just waiting for his instruction, what is to be done. And moment he gets that indication, he'll put it into action. The fulfillment of noble intentions. In fact, Lakshmana clarifies further that dharana actually means not just upholding or accepting noble thoughts, but more importantly to witness, intensely understand the voice of the conscience and to put that into action. So Lakshmana that way represents what is called artha. And next we come to kama. Kama means desire. And Mother Kaikeyi kind of imposed her desire on her son. She said, my son wants to be the king.
Yes.
I want that he should be the king. As though she was speaking for him. But Bharata's nature was very different. He was totally different from that. In fact, even as a child, Swami says, when they used to play, some ball games and all that, and Rama would deliberately lose, and Bharata would come crying to Mother Kausalya, and Mother would inquire what is wrong, whether he lost the game or what, and he would say, no, Rama lost the game, that is why I am crying. And then she would be stunned and say, why are you crying? And he would say, Mother, every time Rama only wins, but this time deliberately he lost so that I can win. I cannot see my brother lose like this. He had no desire, not even a desire to win a simple game as a child. So Bharata's only desire was to see Rama at the helm of affairs. Even when the whole kingdom was offered, today which brother, if he is offered an entire kingdom with all powers, who will readily, wholeheartedly give it to his elder brother because it is dharmic in nature? That is why Swami also describes Bharata as dharma itself, because of his pravartana, dharmic pravartana. That he, for a second also, he did not entertain this thought that I should be the ruler of Ayodhya. All he did was, as soon as he came to know that Rama has left for the forest, he rushed towards the forest. Of course, after finishing all the karmas that he had to do for his father, who had passed away, after that he immediately rushes. In fact, he was not even keen to do that. He just wanted to go and meet Rama immediately and call him back. But Sage Vasishtha says that it is not right on part of a son to leave his duties incomplete. So, you have to fulfill this duty. And Bharata completes that duty and then he rushes to Rama and falls at his feet and pleads with him that Rama, please come and take back the kingdom. He had no desire in him. But for the desire to follow Rama's instruction, to be his servant, that was his only desire. And you can see how here kama was for Atma Dharma.
Yes.
Was for Rama himself. The kama here only was for Rama, for nothing else, nothing worldly in nature. And hence, after 14 years of intense, we also discuss how kama here, desire, is to become a Mahant or Mahapurush. In fact, yes. Bharata was able to do that after 14 years because of his intense contemplation on Rama and implicit obedience to the words and command of Rama, the way he would conduct, the way he would live, the way he would, run the administration of the kingdom, the way Sri Rama would solve the problems of the people, exactly the same way Bharata did. So he reached the pinnacle of perfection. In the duty which Rama had given him by intense contemplation on Rama and implicit obedience to Rama's words. In that way, with only desire to see Rama at the helm of affairs, for to have the Pattabhishekam of Rama being performed, Bharata lived all his life. And after those 14 years, when both the brothers return, it is said that even the three mothers were not able to recognize who is Bharata and who is Rama. He attained Sarupya Mukti even as he was alive in the physical form. He attained Sarupya Mukti. He and Rama looked exactly the same. And when they came to Garland, he could see the predicament. Swami says Bharata also was of Sukshma Buddhi, intense, subtle intelligence. And he could immediately gather the problem of the devotees there, of the Ayodhya Vasis, that they could not recognize who is Rama and who is Bharata. They are looking exactly the same. So Bharata points towards Rama and says, please garland my brother Rama. So immediately they garland Rama. So this kama, this desire, Swami says should be only for Rama, not for worldly things. And we have seen earlier in the story how Mother Sita's example is given by Bhagavan. When she left the comforts of Ayodhya, she got Rama. That is, she left all the desires, kama of the world and the worldly, she got Rama's sannidhi. And when she was enamored by the golden deer and a desire, a kama was developed for the golden deer, she lost Rama. So here Bharata is a perfect example. He never entered the kingdom of Ayodhya since the day Rama left. Mm-hmm. After he finished his father's rituals, he went to the forest never to return back until he returned along with Sri Rama. So he never aspired for any desires or comforts associated with the kingdom. So Bharata is a perfect example of how he is the embodiment of what really kama means and how it should be expressed. So that is how Bharata embodies. And the final one is a very tricky one.
I am very curious about this.
The final one is called Moksha or Shatrughna. Right? Shatrughna here has an excellent characteristic. Though I would not scripturally say that he is equivalent to King Janaka, but his work and his quality was very similar. King Janaka was a Rajarishi. He was a Videha Mukti, was attained by him. He was a Videha Mukta, that is King Janaka. Though he was in the thick of the affairs of the kingdom, he never identified himself with the body and mind. But one characteristic of such a person is Shanti. And Swami attributes Shatrughna to Shanti. Even when he describes how the four brothers were Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema, he says Shatrughna is Shanti. The reason for that is, just imagine the situation. Ayodhya is such a big kingdom. There are so many enemies all around. And Sri Rama along with Lakshmana and Mother Sita have left for the 14-year exile into the forest and in order to vanquish Ravana in the south. Bharata is stationed in Nandigrama, again in the forest. He is not in the helm of affairs. So the only one who managed the whole kingdom, its administration, its security, its protection, the welfare of the people, all that in tune with Sri Rama's principles, the only one who ensured all that was Shatrughna. In spite of all this, Swami says he was of Shanta Swabhava. That Shanti is a Lakshana of Moksha. What is this Shanti? This is not the peace which, you know, I am peaceful now, I am having a cup of coffee, sugar is little less in the coffee and I lose that peace of mind. This is not that kind of peace which, you know, I am peaceful now, I turn on the business channel on the TV, I see the stock exchange, it has crashed and my peace also has crashed. It is not that kind of peace. Swami says, in fact, the Shanti of the Bhakta is the yardstick of measurement of his bhakti. So you can know how much devotion you have or what stage of devotion you are if you can measure your own Shanti. And Shanti here means equal-mindedness, which is also represented by the word Samadhi.
Yes.
Samadhi, Swami, once in Kulwant Hall, was sitting and asking all of us, we students were seated in the third block, that is right in front of Ganesh Portico, where Swami's Sannidhi is there now. And Swami was seated where the Sannidhi is there, maybe slightly to the left of it. And Swami once asked us, what is Samadhi? And all of us gave different types of answers. One student said, Swami, it is trance. Somebody said, Swami, it's a very excited state of being. Somebody said, it is intensely in union with God. And different kinds of answers were coming. And then Swami, as he got up and he was walking, he gave a very simple answer. He said, Samadhi means Samadhi. Dhi means buddhi or mind. Sama means equal. And Swami said, Samadhi means equal-mindedness. So one who lives in all circumstances, whether it is joy or sorrow, you can imagine Shatrughna's situation. He had the same amount of intense love for Rama, for Lakshmana, for Bharata. He has lost all of them. He has lost his father. And none of them are there to support. He is the youngest. And he has to take care of the whole kingdom's affair.
Yes.
It is something which we cannot imagine. Such agony the youngest of the brothers would face. Such agony. All his dearest brothers are not there with him to support him. His dearest father, who was the able warrior and the emperor, until now he is not there with him. And there is gloom all over the country. See, if it's one thing to rule over a country which is joyous and everything is in plenty and everybody is happy, but if there is gloom all over the country, nobody was happy because Rama was not there.
Yes.
To rule over such a country is not a joke. And that Shatrughna was able to achieve with equal-mindedness. That samadhi, equal-mindedness, is a reflection of mohakshaya, moksha.
And after all the hard work he did, Valmiki didn't even feature him in the Ramayana properly. He's not even there in the story.
That is what is equal-mindedness.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
And in a sense, the sage Valmiki might not have written elaborately about him, the very fact that
He had no complaints
because of his samabuddhi, because of equal-mindedness. The other thing which I would imagine is his own beloved Rama, Shri Rama, to come back in the form of Satya Sai Rama, and after 20,000 years shower praises on his brother. I think that would have satisfied Shatrughna for all that.
And that is very true in the case of Mother Kaikeyi and Mother Sumitra.
Yes,
too.
They have in fact waited. I wouldn't say they waited because they didn't expect anything.
Yes, yes.
But after 20,000 years, their true nature has been revealed to the world. And how grateful we are to our beloved Bhagavan.
Yes.
If not for him, if not for Sri Rama himself coming in the form of Satya Sai Rama, how would we ever know the intricacies of these stories? How would we ever know the grandeur and the depth of each of these personalities? How could one ever correlate these four brothers to either Satya Dharma Shanti Prema or Dharma Artha Kama Moksha? It is impossible. Unless the Sadguru himself takes this form in order. Guru means, Swami says, who removes Ajnana. Or who removes the darkness of ignorance. If not for the Sadguru's presence, how would it be possible for us simple devotees to understand these in-depth, intricate, subtlest of the subtle values and lessons from Ramayana?
Oh, Rama, oh, Rama, oh, Rama, oh, Rama,